But basically, the bottom line is we're running out of oil. Do you believe that's true? Number one. And if you do, at what pump price would your current lifestyle be unsustainable? Do you think most Americans can accept this kind of reality, this harsh reality, if they were actually told about it? I mean, I'm only Art Bell. I can say, hey, UFO guy, he's crazy as a loon. None of that's true. If it was really announced by somebody in authority that we were, in fact, the world is, in fact, running out of oil, and the people believed it, could they accept that kind of harsh reality? Would you steal or kill to feed your family if it came to that? And then finally, do you support the U.S. going to war for energy supplies, which is the same as question number four, would you steal or kill to feed your family? It's just applying it to the entire nation. Back in a moment. I can get away with discussing this kind of thing on national radio because Art Bell's a UFO guy, right? That's my typecast burden to live with, and I'll always have it. Which makes it easy for people to say, well, yeah, the UFO guy. And to some extent, I mean, even Rolling Stone magazine, it's where this article came from. Brilliant article, in my opinion. And, you know, I want to take a second to officially invite its author, James Howard Koestler, on the program as a guest. Absolutely would make a superb guest, wouldn't he? I didn't read you all of the article. I left lots of good parts out. You should go to Rolling Stone and read this article. In the meantime, he's officially invited, my words, as a guest. Love to have him on. This is one hot mama of a topic. There's no question about it. And it provoked these questions that I cooked up. Hard questions. First time caller line, you're on the air. Top of the morning.
Yes, good morning, Art. This is Joe in L.A.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic topic, Art.
Thanks. It is, yes.
You know, Art, one thing that I think sometimes gets missed, you know, we could look at the problem differently. I remember as a kid, you'd get an electric train set or a racing car, a slot car, and why couldn't we change the transportation system so that we had an electric grid in the road? And then our cars could be electric and basically zip between L.A. and Vegas. You know, right now we're trying to do it with fuel cells. We're hauling around thousands of pounds of batteries and so forth. Why not change the entire infrastructure?
Okay, I see where you're coming from, but still you've got to propel car A, B, C, and D, millions of them, from here to there, and that's going to cost a lot of energy, right?
Yes, it would. But we have a lot of coal in this country. We have, you know, there's still a lot of oil. But we could generate electricity using it more efficiently, use, you know, pollution controls, you know, millions of dollars worth of pollution controls to really get it clean, electricity, and just be more efficient.
And according to this trucker that called a little while ago, every emission control they put on a car, it reduces the mileage that it gets, or truck.
Yes, yes, and I think on, but if we use this on coal plants or electric generators, that would be one thing. I think it really comes down to pound for pound. Why don't we move 1,000 pounds, two persons in a small vehicle, at 1,000 pounds instead of 5,000 pounds? It takes five times as much energy, basically, to do that.
All of these things are things I guess we ought to be getting our butts busy with right now. Do you believe the energy crisis is real?
Yes, absolutely.
You do?
Okay. Right now we're in a bit of a crisis, but we're on the downward slope. We have maybe 20, 30 years of oil left.
That was the thrust of this article. But, you know, the other thrust was that even before we get to the end of the oil, the real usable oil, we're going to be well into crisis. In other words, pump prices.
Yes. And the Canadian who was talking about how they got to heat their homes with oil. I mean, they got to do that or freeze to death.
They admitted per capita they use more.
And we just need to be a lot smarter. We need to... you know, in World War II, people were able to get organized. They saw it as a crisis, and it was a matter of life and death, and that's what this is going to come down to.
In a lot of ways, we've forgotten those kind of hard times a long time ago. At what pump price would your current lifestyle be turned to dog poop?
Wow. Well, I think $5. I have four cars in my household now. With insurance and just keeping them running. But, yeah, $5 a gallon, we're going to start riding bikes or something.
If it came down to a Mad Max kind of deal, would you be prepared to steal or even kill?
In a heartbeat. Yeah, to protect my family, I'd do what it took to protect my family.
As you hear more and more people honestly admitting that this morning, we've got to figure out a way not to get to this place, or it's going to be exactly what we're hearing this morning, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. We need to work together instead of having to go to the other option.
Thank you so much for your call. You have to listen to these people and what they're saying. You have to understand the gravity of what you're hearing. I know it's a hard question, but you are getting honest answers. And what it means is that either we figure this out one way or the other, or that is what is dead ahead for all of us. Dead ahead for all of us. Think about it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Sean in Alabama. I'm listening on XM Channel 165.
Yeah, good old XM. Yes, sir.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be able to listen at all.
Right.
But I think what we're getting ready here in the short term to have to face up to is the result of short-sightedness on the part of humanity as a whole.
Hmm.
Back 100 years or so ago when, the combustion engines and the world started getting itself addicted on oil and, we're all in love with the power and the way that it eased our lives and everything, and no one ever stopped to consider what the long-term ramifications of building up a world economy that depends on this fuel source would be. And I mean, it's not just,
Well, let's take what you've said. We're not long-term thinkers, and I don't know how we change that. Our CEOs can't think past the next quarter. Our politicians, most part, can't think past 4 years, max. So how do we develop long-term thinking?
Well, honestly, it's at the point now, I don't know if we have enough time left to be able to develop long-term thinking.
Huh.
It's not just our cars that depend on gas or the lights. I mean, the food supply itself.
I know.
And, the only reason we have 6 billion-plus people on the planet is because of the power that we get from oil to be able to transport foods quickly to keep them cold, to
That's
keep
correct.
Them from spoiling.
Dead right.
And at any given time in this country, we've only got about, 3 days worth of food on reserve?
Something like that.
And, I think that the crisis is real,
mm-hmm.
and it's not looking good because I don't see any people in the world just quietly going back into the Stone Age.
I don't either.
And so if they don't, barring some technological miracle that solves the crisis here in the next
like that manual
10-15 years, yeah. It's not looking too good for the future.
And if it came down to it, the very hard question, whether you'd steal or even kill to feed your family, if it came down to that.
The honest answer is, yeah, no one likes to think about it, but, you're not going to sit there and watch your family and your loved ones starve and die. You're going to do what you have to do. And the same goes with countries. Countries aren't going to sit by and watch their way of life and their economy completely collapse and fall down around their ears,
That's right. That's why countries go to war.
And the thing is now that, thanks in part to the power that we gain from oil, we've got the ability with weapons that can completely destroy the planet. And if we do hit that pinch and we don't find a way out of it, those weapons they're going to be used. And, God help us if it gets to that.
Yeah, that would be the name in use, all right. Thank you very much for the call.
All right, you have a good night, Art.
Right, you too. And I hope this is sort of sinking in. It certainly is to me. In other words, what would occur? Is there really any question about what would occur if the pinch turned into a grab, if the oils began to dry up from an economic point of view, what, at $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 a gallon, wherever it's ultimately headed? Each one of those dollars would bring with it millions of Americans who would be homeless or would not be able to feed their families or would not be able to make their mortgage payments or whatever. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
East of the Rockies. Hi, Art.
Yes, hi.
This is Ron, and I'm calling from Murrayville, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
90 miles north of St. Louis, listening on the good old KTRS Big 550.
It's big, all right.
Fantastic program, and I'm in the middle of farm country here.
Right.
Right on a farm. I can't say that I am a day-to-day farmer myself. I'm not. But in just a few weeks, all the guys around here are going to be out putting in the crop for the coming season.
Sure.
Corn, as far as you can see, and, of course, soybeans.
Sure.
Now, if gasoline suddenly went to between $4 and $5 a gallon tomorrow.
Right.
And we're talking really diesel fuel for the farm implements.
Sure.
Nowadays, it's going to hit these guys hard.
Real hard.
And it wouldn't be too long that, well, they're all going to tell you that the greatest thing that they'd like to see is a lot less corn in the country because there's everybody's got corn and less corn would mean higher prices. But think of all the debt that a lot of these guys are carrying. Some better off than others.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got to pull up and suddenly double your cost just to get it in the ground, all right? Now, we're just putting it in the ground. Now you're thinking about down the road next fall, you got to go out and bring it out. What's the price going to be then? What's going to happen?
And that's not all. I mean, assuming you get it out of the ground at some great golden price, you then have to get it over the road and to the stores.
Well, sure.
And by the time it gets to the consumer, it's going to be out of sight. And this whole thing could ratchet up so quickly and in such a terrifying way that the kind of horrible questions that I'm asking could be the operative questions.
I think it's there now. You know, the towns that are in this area are essentially all bedroom communities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and years ago it was, well, everybody, probably every other house might have been a farm, or they had something to do with the farm, even though they lived in the little town, but not today. All right. Now, where I'm at, I'm really an anomaly, I guess. I'm not a farmer. I still have connection to a farm that I grew up on. All right. My brother's just down the road, and he's handling all the operation, really. But everybody gets in their car or truck and goes at least 5 miles down the road, mostly 10, to get whatever they really need.
I'm sure.
Okay. And it would just, it'll bring things to a halt, I would think, pretty quick when we get into, well, above $3 a gallon. And it's $2.20 around here now.
I know.
Okay. You know, you're just a bit older than I am, and I can barely remember President Eisenhower, but the 1950s, you know, it's like everything happened in the 50s, some people will say, okay? I got to believe that if this same scenario was going on, and if it was the 1950s today, I think that the president would be on television pretty quick addressing the nation. Of course, television was brand new back then.
Maybe so. Do you think that a president today could go on television and say, I'm here to address the American people and tell them the truth about our immediate energy future, and then just lay out the whole truth? Could he do that? Could the American people take that kind of blunt reality?
I think we could take it, but more of the problem is we don't want to take it.
Yeah.
We don't want to hear it. I would like to think that President Bush has got the guts to go on in front of the nation and lay it out straight like that.
And then start a Manhattan-style project for alternative fuels and all the rest of that. Yeah, wouldn't that be wonderful to even contemplate? But why do I not think it's going to happen? I don't think that's going to happen, do you? We operate by crisis in America, and until there is a crisis, rarely do we do anything. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, sir. Daniel in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Anyone who steals or kills for food or oil in an apocalyptic Mad Max scenario is a spiritual fool. Because physically, you can run, but you cannot hide spiritually. You will be judged.
Well, perhaps so. But there would be, you must admit, there will be many of them. And you've heard them on this program this morning.
Well, hopefully they'll change your mind after hearing this, because under this scenario, the sooner you surrender to the new totalitarian military New World Order and are executed for refusing the mark of the beast, the better for you then and for the eternity of your soul. And only a fool would steal or kill for food or oil and damn his soul to hell forever.
Well, I understand that from your point of view, that's absolutely true. But man after man, and some women have come on here this morning and said in a New York second.
But to prolong your, even if they're not spiritually minded, to prolong your life under that scenario
is a sin.
Is to prolong your own agony, pain, and suffering.
Yep, I've got it. All right, sir, I've got it. Thank you. I know. But it's not going to matter. That's something you have got to understand. It's not going to matter to these people. So it has to matter to you. I don't know. Americans are, what are we? We're probably, you know what? I'll leave that for all of you. I there are many words that I could conjure, but I'll refrain. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes. Hi. Where are you?
Actually, I'm west of the Rockies. I'm in Chico, California.
Oh, I can't take your call on this line, bud. I'm sorry. That's the International Line reserved for those out of the country. Mostly. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
I'm in Tennessee, Morristown, Tennessee.
Morristown, Tennessee. Okay, sir.
Listen to you a long time. First time caller. I've been waiting about an hour now to get on.
Uh-huh.
And I've got to put my 2 cents worth on this energy crisis.
Fire away.
I'm in my early 70s. My father said 50 years ago that before I died, for my end of my life, we would see an energy crisis that would really set this world back. And I think that we're approaching that. And the real thing is, I think we are too eager to go out and waste our natural resources at all costs. And we've got hundreds of thousands of cars on the road that are driven by teenagers running up and down the road that are going nowhere, accomplishing nothing. We have tractors and trailers sitting on our parking lots at these sleeping places where they rest with their motors running all night long. They never shut them off.
Mm-hmm.
We waste more energy just for nothing. And we're too blinded, I reckon, because we've had it too easy to face up to what the real problems are. And I would be happy to make some big sacrifices to save our energy program. But if we don't do something real quick, you know, we take like race car drivers. I love to go to races, but how many millions of gallons every week for these cars or races? These people drive from one end of the country to the other to go to racetrack.
Well, all right, back to it. If you are fortunate enough to have a radio station that replays the first hour, many of them do, you know, just in case you missed what launched this program that produced all of these comments, you know, it'll go into repeat in about 20-something minutes. So hang in there. If not, sorry you missed it. International Line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Yes, I'm calling from Paris, France.
Paris!
Oh, my God, Gay Paris.
I love Paris.
Wonderful. I live in Montmartre, right near Sacré-Cœur.
Oh, my goodness.
You've been there.
I've been near it. Yes.
Well, you have an open... I'm in a similar business to you. I'm a film producer, and I'm a Canadian. Oh, my God. Another Canadian.
Another Canadian.
Just to share a little bit of my, before I go into my major diatribe, I've lived in New York, I've lived in L.A., I've lived in Atlanta, London, Milano, and Paris. So I'm here basically to give you a little bit of insight into perhaps the European perspective on the energy crisis.
By all means.
We've adapted quite well to prices that the American people haven't even yet realized.
That's true.
And research and development in Europe is one of our priorities is to basically look into means of producing energy-efficient cars. And we've accomplished that to a certain degree. And the public seem to be, they seem to accept that state of affair. I'd like you to ask me specific questions because I'm a little bit nervous.
Well, all right. I just read a little earlier a Detroit Free Press article said the price of gas there is about $5.60 a gallon.
Let me do a quick calculation. It's about €1.50 a liter. It's actually more expensive. It's closer to $7.
Oh, my God.
It's fine. We have cars. We have cars. I understand. It must be
you've
culturally.
You've gone native, haven't you?
Well, I've been here since 87.
Yes. Yeah, well, then you are native.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Art, really, you've been here, and you've seen the cars. They perform well.
Oh, yes.
Highly efficient.
All of that said, sir, there's a world demand for oil.
Absolutely.
And there's every probability, according to what I've read, that we actually are beginning to run out of cheap oil.
Absolutely.
So it's going to get real expensive. And this is going to bring on certain changes.
You have some logistical problems in America.
Yes.
And the logistical problems I'd like to refer to are the whole infrastructure that was set up around the car and the automobile,
mm-hmm.
as you know, starting in the 50s and the 60s. You have freeways, you have an infrastructure that is basically designed around the automobile.
It's fact.
And in Europe, for example, we have specific laws that do not allow cars into the major city centers. You're allowed to keep your car outside in the periphery around the cities. And you are given specific, incentives to either, one, leave your car at a free parking spot just outside of the city and use rapid transit to enter. Our rapid transit system, as you know, our TGV, is incredible.
It's incredible. I agree with you. But look, again, all of this said, we're mm-hmm. running out of oil. And so what we need to be talking about is, more serious. All these things that you're doing, we should be doing, and
well,
even more.
May I interrupt you for one moment?
Yes.
I think it's important, if I may. I understand you have a lot of listeners. We, I'm speaking generally in Europe, we have very specific R&D going into, number one, minimizing the use of gas in terms of consumption. It hasn't, as you know, the lifestyle in Europe is on par with America, at least. We basically are going into alternative energy research and development. We're doing biodiesel, we're doing a mix of electrical. In fact, I just did a photo shoot this weekend for EDF, which is Electricity of France. It was very interesting. All of their service vehicles are electric. Now, I'm not saying that that's the solution. In fact, where do we draw our power?
Energy,
as you know,
energy.
France is 85% nuclear.
Yes.
And as you know that, and of course, the nuclear refinery, in fact, we're building more and more. But we are looking into, and this is going to cause a major controversy on the air, we are looking at zero-point energy possibilities.
Oh, well,
the Germans, at Mercedes, for example, as you know, are developing hybrid cars that may be going into that possibility. And
all
that's
right.
Another.
Well, that's really getting out on a limb. I thank you for the call all the way from Europe. I do appreciate it, but that's 0 point maybe. But there's no 0 point riding around on our roads right now or yours in France. So that's pretty far out on a limb. As for the rest of it, sure, Europe has adapted to higher prices. But look, the traffic clogs in Paris are pretty bad. I was there, and I remember. Pretty bad indeed. So this is a worldwide problem. And I'm not suggesting we ought not. In fact, I'm sort of pleading with the powers that be to, yes, go ahead and let us begin doing all of these things that will mitigate this and may push it a few years further away if we start doing them now. But I'm pointing out that we're not. We're not doing these things. And we have got to start, and we have got to start soon, and it's got to be done. This is one thing that, one place where I think the federal government does have a responsibility for all the things they get their fingers into where they ought not. This is one area where they should be very, very, very much involved, because it is a national security issue. Our national security is at stake. So it is an appropriate place for our government to be. And where are they? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you?
I'm just spiffy. where are you calling from?
Alaska.
All the way up in Alaska.
Yes.
Yes.
I just wanted to put my two cents in. I've been listening all night, and these people have been calling, and I can concur with everything they're saying. But
really?
The thing is, the world population is growing at a rapid rate, and I do believe it's going to come down to a crisis.
Sure it is. It's obvious.
Yeah. And I think people's attitudes have to change.
How does that come about?
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe it has to come to where we're actually fighting over food. Maybe hopefully before that.
Well, people left no doubt in my mind about the fact that they would fight, steal, or kill for food if necessary. I mean, a lot of people have been very honest this morning, but that's where it would be if it gets that bad. And
yeah, I hope not. I really hope not. But I think attitudes have to change now.
Well, you're going to have to tell me more. I mean, describe a changed attitude to me. What is a person with a changed attitude?
Well, the technology. I mean, we got to look at this now. I mean, the changes have to have, you know, they have to start going in that direction at different technologies for our power, and start steering away from using petroleum.
Seems like it ought to be underway right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad that you actually have the show. This is very important.
I think it is important too. And we should be doing all of this stuff now. But even that said, all it's going to do, I think, if this article is and other articles like it are correct, it's going to push the date of the real reckoning a few years away. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing it. We should. But it might only be pushing it a few more years away. We really need more than just sort of what we can do right now. I mean, we can do solar panels. We can do wind power. We can do ocean power. We can build more dams. We can do more, even nuclear plants.
I mean, the stuff is out there. How come you just haven't grabbed onto it? Is it because of the people that are in control?
Well, I don't know. It's a lot of things. I've given that a lot of thought myself. Nobody wants a nuclear plant in their backyard.
Right.
Nobody wants waste in their backyard. And
you think our demise is inevitable?
I wish you hadn't asked me that. Probably. Unless, as you say, there's a complete attitude change, and frankly, I don't see that happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you very, very much for the call. It is indeed a very, very, very important show. If you absorb it, if you understand it, then you understand the dire situation that is presented. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
It's Jim in Los Angeles on KFI.
Yes, sir.
And a few of your guests that you've had on the past make me wonder if things could very easily be bad, but I wonder if they're going to get better than we even imagine.
Which guests are you particularly referring to?
Well, a couple of weeks ago you had a guy on talking about nanotechnology.
Yes.
And solar getting down to under $1 a watt.
And the solar paint and all the rest of it. I suppose there's a bit of a race on. I mean, technology could save us, but we almost have to, proceed here as though it won't, even though it might. Then again, it might not. And so a prudent, careful, conservative person proceeds as though there might not be a miracle.
No, I would agree, and I've been acting along those lines personally. I was a little kid during the two oil shocks in the 70s, and I didn't like the way things were. I mean, just being...
Man, it was awful. I mean, people were not at all civilized with each other. They were fighting. They were short-tempered. It was pretty bad. And it seems to me that society since then has become less tolerant, less civil, right?
I would agree with that, too.
People are more likely today, by a big margin, to tear each other's throats out than they were then. So...
Well, I guess to answer one of your questions, I would, as an individual,
yes.
I would take extreme measures, you know, to act in my defense or that of my family. But
you would steal or kill to feed your family?
Well, no, as a matter of personal defense, but not as a matter of convenience.
Well, I don't know if a question of that magnitude fits into the word convenience. It's not a convenience. If your family is starving to death, you have serious decisions to make, right?
Oh, I agree. And I'd rather grow potatoes in a dirt-filled tire than bump someone in the head to steal theirs.
Got you. All right. Thank you very, very much. And that was an exception to the way that question has been answered all through the evening. Pretty rare exception. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Talking to me now?
I am.
All right, thank you. I wanted to talk concerning the oil thing. You say there's a big concern here in the United States, and not just the U.S., but all over the world about oil.
What I said was that oil is now a world commodity. The price of oil is determined by the entire world, not just what the U.S. is willing to pay. China, well, India, all these other countries, they're bidding for the same barrels that we're using, sir.
For some years, like the man said, for 100 years before, we have been depending on oil. And if we've learned anything from history, we must have learned from the Indians, but we don't steal, kill. We take the animals out in the forest, which we would survive by, but we wouldn't need necessarily oil for that, but we would need horses. I mean, that's what we started off with. That's what George Washington drove in on. I mean, he was the first president of the United States.
So are you ready to saddle up?
Saddle up?
Yes. Saddle
well,
up,
not
sir.
That, but we're just too dependent on oil. I mean, it's like we're taking something.
No. I'm just asking if you're ready to saddle up. Are you ready to get on a horse and do your
well,
daily?
I'm just saying that we should adapt because that's what we have been doing over the years of technology, and we should adapt to something new. And there's always going to be something new, because it even says that in the Bible.
Does it?
There shall be new things.
It guarantees new stuff. Well, right up until the last day, right? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I was just thinking that with this new LED technology, I think even one of your ads says that if everybody switched to LEDs, you could take you'd have an extra power plant kicking around.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think conservation would be very helpful for a lot of folks. And President Eisenhower, I think, really shed a lot of light on what we're up against as far as the global military complex. I think 9/11 was contrived by them. And
the military-industrial complex was what he warned against.
Yeah, and I think that these draconian beasts that have been conjuring up our and distorting our politics for the last several decades and creating wars and strife and stuff are the problem. If you took a few percent of your black project funding, you could build new refineries, you could fund fuel subsidies and technology for green energy. You could help everybody with the amount of money that those guys consume free and clear of any congressional, it seems, discretion. And I really think...
Well, that's a pretty interesting comment to contemplate. How many of the rest of you think that if we diverted some of that black money, you know, the money that goes for the very secret projects, that, my God, there'd be a panacea of energy. If we just took the money that went into those black projects and all those neat airplanes that we have on Development Area 51 and elsewhere, why, the world would be a better place with energy to spare. I don't think so. But I do think a project, a Manhattan-like project, to begin to mitigate what's coming is in order. And I'm wondering day by day When is it going to be announced? When is somebody going to show us the kind of leadership we know we need? Because this is coming. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Mackenzie. I'm calling from Fort St. John, B.C., Canada.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks. I think one of the questions you should ask your listeners is, would any one of them be willing to give up their automobile?
To give up their car?
Yeah, which you know they wouldn't.
I think most, yes, if most answered honestly, they'd say that you'd have to rip it from my cold, dead hands.
So, unfortunately, we live in a society that's totally dependent on fossil fuels worldwide. And it doesn't matter if it's the United States, Canada, France, wherever. It is a problem. And we have no backup. We have no other system to go to.
That's correct. We don't.
And that's where people got to start thinking. You hear this phrase, you know, think outside the box. Well, we more or less got ourselves in a box. And if we don't start thinking about it, it's going to come down to mayhem. It's going to come down to people getting desperate.
That's why I did this program, so that the everybody could kind of listen to everybody else and understand the lengths to which people would go if they were pushed that far. You can only push people so far, and I kind of wanted to understand how far people would push before they'd start to push back really hard. And I think we've learned that this morning. The answer is they'd damn well push back. People would be short-tempered and very unlikely to behave well.
No, all the rules of conduct and social well-being and all that would go out the window. Mm. Like, no one would listen to anybody or reason or anything like that. It would be just total chaos.
Then that makes this a really serious situation, right?
Absolutely.
Appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art?
Yes.
My name is Brian. I'm in Glassford, Illinois, which is near Peoria.
Yes, Brian. Not a lot of time here.
Okay, my biggest point is that had we spent the $300 billion that we spent on the war in Iraq, had we spent that on developing alternative fuels, we would have solved our problem.
Hmm. I wonder if that's true. I mean, I wonder if just throwing money at something, even $300 billion, whether it can make it happen. You think?
I think it can. And the question that you're asking, would we kill for oil, is a rhetorical question, because that's exactly what we're doing in Iraq.
Yes.
There's no way that we would be there if the oil were not there.
Well, you're about the fifth person this morning, at least, to tell me that, and you're absolutely correct. I happen to believe that also. We are doing that, but it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to get a whole lot worse.
It seems that Bush's energy solution is all centers around ANWR, which the stories differ. The estimates differ. You know, is it 6 months worth of supply up there or a couple of years?
Yeah.
Regardless, I think that we should conserve that for national emergencies, primarily war and protection of our country, rather than just squandering that as we do much of the other.
I absolutely agree with you. Listen, thank you so very much for calling.
Thank you.
Have a very good morning. It's been a wonderful weekend.